Brethren, has anyone done something to you so wrong? So wrong that you hold it in your heart? Now, we've been told, we've heard messages also about, if you have a problem with a brethren, to go and confront with him, and if that doesn't work, to go with him and a witness. And if that doesn't work, to go with him in front of a minister. But here, brethren, I'm talking about people that are not of our faith. When we go out and we go into a workplace, when we deal with people one-to-one, and if you confront people with something they did wrong, it might be a wrong thing. You know, they might take it bad and you might be into an altercation. So we ask God for wisdom on that part. But has it ever been done? For most of the time, people do something done to you wrong, and they call it passive aggressive. In I guess the psychological world, they call it passive aggressive. And what it is, they get at you through an indirect way. And it could be so wrong to you that you hold it to you. You can't, it's nothing that you can reach them and talk to them about, but it might be a job. They might remove a job from you. It might be taking away a job from you. It might not. It might be owing you money. Things like that. What I'm talking about, brethren, is flagrant, intentionally done wrong to you and your family. More times than not, it is done to you by someone not of the faith. In some cases, the person doing harm does not even care. Doesn't even care. So the whole thing about rationalizing with them and talking with them goes out the window. That's where godly wisdom comes up to you and say, you know what? I'm not even going there. I'm not even trying to. I'll go as far as the conversation goes, and I'll drop it. And sometimes we do that. Cut our losses and drop it. And leave it up to God. God will take note of that, and he'll put that in his to-do list. And one of the classic examples is the King Ranch. The King Ranch, not too far from here. Captain King cheated his partners out of a large portion of the ranch, amongst other people that he cheated out. That's what it, there's nothing, I don't know, I couldn't find any documented, but there is, you talk to a lot of people in South Texas that Captain King did manipulate a lot of ranches into selling their ranch to him for pennies on the dollar. But for this portion, he cheated these families from a large portion of the ranch. And to this day, their descendants are still fighting the King's descendants over that piece of property. And then we have on the swing the pendulum on the way on the other side. You know, and Mr. Armstrong passed away, left it over to Mr. Koch. Mr. Koch took over, and basically the church fell apart. Then Mr. Koch died. And then we heard people say, well, that's what he gets for doing that to the church. That's hatred and envy. My sermon today, brethren, is about holding a grudge. The Bible is riddled with examples for revenge killings. But the classic example that I want to pull out is about King David. And what King David did, and not by himself, but what he did, together with Bathsheba. Bathsheba wasn't, you know, innocent. You know, it wasn't customary back then to bathe on a roof in the mid-afternoon, so everybody can see you. But David had someone that he was devoted to him, and he had somebody devoted strongly to him. He had a counselor named Ahithophel, if I can pronounce that right. I kept on practicing Ahithophel. Ahithophel was a wise counselor. His words were sought by David. David had him in his beck and call. But David's trust was lost by Atzaphon. It was what David's acts with Bathsheba that turned Atzaphon against him. Let's go to 2 Samuel, brother. 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 12. You can go with me. 15th chapter of 2 Samuel. And verse 12. Now this is right in the mix of things, right when Absalom was stirring up strife. And it says here, while Absalom was offering sacrifices, he also sent for Atzaphon, the Gilonite, David's counselor, to come from Gilah, his hometown. And so the conspiracy gained strength and Absalom's following kept increasing. What I found out pretty interesting is, well, Absalom was offering sacrifices to God. He was conjuring up something to turn over or to retake the kingship away from David. Now, we all know why Absalom revolted against David. It's because David's oldest son, Amnon, raped Absalom's daughter, Tamar. So the momentum is building. David's closest advisor is siding with Absalom. It is not long when David finds out. Let's go a little bit back, the 15th chapter of 2 Samuel. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 31. Chapter 15 of 2 Samuel, verse 31. Says, now David had been told, Atzaphon is among the conspirators with Absalom. So David prayed, O Lord, turn Absalom's counsel into foolishness. Now, I have a question. It says, why didn't the scripture show that David was devastated? Because, however, this Atzaphon was very close to David on everything. But instead it said he prayed that his words turned to foolishness. It's because David knew what he had done. And he knew why Atzaphon did what he did. Let's drill down into why Atzaphon's reason was for treason. 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 34. 2 Samuel, chapter 23, verse 34. And there was no Smith or Jones in these Old Testament, so bear with me. It says, Eliphaz, son of Asleah, the Maccathite, comma, and then it goes down next one. It says, Eliam, son of Atzaphon, the Gileonite. Now, Eliam... I looked up. Eliam was one of David's original 30 mighty men. So what David did was even more sinister than just taking, we know what he did to Uriah. So we go further and we know now that Eliam was the son of Atzaphon. Now let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel, verse 3. Let's drill down and look at something here. 2 Samuel, chapter 11, verse 3. And it says, and David sent someone out to find out about her, Bathsheba. The man said, isn't this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite? So we know now, it was Eliam's daughter, but she was Eliam's daughter. So that made Bathsheba Atzaphon's granddaughter. What I find also pretty interesting, it says Uriah the Hittite. Why does the Bible break down somebody by tribe or by, not so much race, but by clan maybe? Why didn't they put Eliam from Judea? You know, but it was specific in saying Uriah the Hittite. The Hittites were a very powerful nation before David came into play. And they were mostly in Asia Minor and Turkey. But their kingdom fell apart, which scattered most of them. They were from a European ancestor. So back to this. So Bathsheba may in fact have been Jezebel's granddaughter. And Uriah was Jezebel's son-in-law. So basically, Jezebel turned against him because he was closest to David. He was at arm's length. So why did Jezebel betray David? Because when David murdered Uriah, he was murdering Eliam's son-in-law. We must be careful because our sin will surely find us out. And in David's case, it was. And cause severe consequences. Jezebel was a bitter man who threw in his lot with Absalom for one reason, to get back at David, to exact revenge. He was so focused on destroying David. Some may say, well, David did, he deserved it. He did them wrong. Yes, he did. But Jezebel knew better as well. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 16, and we'll find out why. 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 23. Here's the reason, and here's a hard pill to swallow, brethren, as Christians and what we know. 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 33 says, "Now in those days the advice of Jezebel gave was like that of one who inquires of God." That was how both David and Absalom regarded all of Jezebel's advice. Some translations say it's almost angelic, almost, you know, God sent. So we can safely say that Jezebel had a relationship with God, a line of communication. Remember, Samuel was dead, and Nathan was a prophet as well. But Jezebel was at arm's length of it. And he went against David. Now, was Jezebel the only counselor of David? Let's go to 1 Chronicles 27, verse 32, brother, and we'll find out. 1 Chronicles chapter 27 and verse 32. Chapter 27 of 1 Chronicles and verse 32. And it says here, "Jonathan, David's uncle, was a counselor." That's one. "A man of insight and a scribe." He was David's basically scribe because people back then, not many people knew how to write. "Jael, son of Hachmoni, took care of the king's sons, plural. And then with verse 33, "Jezebel was the king's counselor." That's all he did. And then we go down, "Hushai the Archite was the king's friend. Jezebel was succeeded by Jehoiada," we heard of him, "son of Benaiah, and by Jabar. And then here comes one, Joab was the commander of the royal army. He was in charge of all of David's army. So we know how Jezebel feels. Now how about Eliam? Eliam was one of David's, he was with David from the very beginning, but you don't hear about Eliam getting back at David. He was one of David's 30 men. He was through with David from the very beginning, and to be betrayed like that. David murdered Uriah, Eliam's son-in-law, and the account does not say, but Jezebel would have been a lot better if he would have let God handle it. if he would have done like it's been suggested, if he would have gone and confronted David and said, what you did is wrong, and he would have divested himself from David or done something to separate himself and leave God to take care of it. Because after all, David, what he did by his sheer greed, did a tremendous thing. But the person that did tell him that was the prophet Nathan. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. The prophet Nathan did exactly what Athpal should have done. He should have done that. Chapter 12, verse 9 through 12. Now, this is after Nathan tells him a riddle about the man, the rich man with the that took the goat of the poor man and dressed it out. And now, towards the end, he's saying, well, you're the rich man, David. And we continue from there. We pick up from there. He says, why did you despise the word of the Lord by doing what is evil in his eyes, in the Lord's eyes, not in your eyes? Did you notice that? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house. And I often try to understand that little word, those, that little sentence. Never from your house. Now, is that as long as David lives or his lineage starts, begins, or lives on? I don't know. Because you despise me and took the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your own. This is what the Lord says. Out of your own household I am going to bring calamity upon you. Before your very eyes I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you. And by the way, he had eight. And he will lie with your wives in broad daylight. Verse 12, you did it in secret, but I will do this thing in broad daylight before all Israel. And then verse 13, then David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. Nathan replied, the Lord has taken away your sin. You are not going to die, but because by doing this, you have made the enemies of the Lord show utter contempt. The son born to you will die. I bet you, brethren, that David wished he had died. Because that way, all he went through after that was terrible. And that was believed to be punishment for David's sin of adultery and murder. Remember, when he sent... Joab was merciless. I don't know if you've read up on Joab. David told Joab, put him into the thick of what he's talking about, Uriah. Send Uriah. He had 30 company commanders, and Uriah was one of them. So he told Joab, send him straight to the thick of things. So he didn't actually just kill Uriah. He killed hundreds, maybe thousands of Uriah's troops along with him. And if Athpal would have let God deliver, David would probably pay a heavier price. How about Bathsheba? Let's go to 2 Samuel 11, verse 4, brother. And I want to read something that everybody, most of us, not all of us, have read or been told before. But I want to point something out here. And it says, 11 verse 4, it says, then David sent a messenger to get her. She came to him and slept with her. He slept with her. Now, I want you to ask you a question, brother. Did you read anywhere that she was forced or coerced? Did you read where she said no? Scripture seemed to imply that she went willingly. I'm sure she would not have been so willing if maybe King Ahab would have asked her. Some may say, well, she had to go because he was a king. You know, and she probably resisted his advances, but it's not documented. I'm not so sure about that. Because you don't have to go there, but in the account of Tamar and Amnon, in 2 Samuel 13 and verse 12, Tamar told Amnon no, not just once, time and time again, no. But Amnon still did it. So Atzebal knew better, brethren. Going back to Atzebal. Atzebal knew better. And it's hard, and I put ourselves in Atzebal's position sometimes, because we sometimes have to let God take over our problems. You know, myself, I'm the type of person that, you know, if somebody did me wrong, I'll be the first one to. And sometimes I have to rein back myself and say, okay, calm down and let things play out. And we go and confront that person one time, say, this is what you did on a wise level. And sometimes some people aren't, you can't confront because sometimes it's not there. It's just not there, brother. Ask God for wisdom above all, like King Solomon did. Above all, when he asked for wisdom above all. Let's go to Proverbs 24, brother. Proverbs 24 and verse 29. And this is something I read to myself. And, you know, we as Christians, we're held at a higher level than other people, brother, that aren't of this knowledge. And it's sometimes, this is very hard for me. I don't know about you. It says, do not say, this is 24:29, do not say, I'll do to him as he has done to me. I'll pay that man back for what he did. And that brings me back, brethren, and it's haunting me. I was in college, this is before I was in church, and I was not of whatever. So we were at a cafeteria, and there was a person there that was, he was familiar with the scriptures. And I was taunting him, and I said, he was saying that he had a problem with one of his professors, and he was talking to us. And he said, do you mean to tell me, you know, and he was talking about being calm and collective, and turned the other cheek, and I said, okay. He said, you mean to tell me that if I go and just, you know, knock you off that chair, that you're not going to do anything? He says, I'll best probably just tuck my shirt and leave. So that, brethren, that is what reminds me every time. Sometimes we just have to get up and leave. Sometimes it's not worth listening to some people that are talking against us. So, brethren, sometimes we have teachers that give us a hard time as well. But I'm not saying not to challenge it. Challenge it nonetheless. Leave the rest to God. You did your part. Don't be like Atzebal. Don't try to handle it yourself. Brethren, in the church also, we've had problems too. How it fell apart, if it affected all of us. And the feast, I went to Branson, I got to know some gentleman there that he was somewhat, I guess we can say angry. He attended the feast that with us at Kagwa, but at the same time, his family was attending a feast at another a breakaway church. And sometimes we just have to ask God for understanding. And sometimes we are brought to that to go ahead and get ourselves maybe a thicker skin. And that's part of our wisdom education. But one thing for sure, brethren, and Paul said it to the T. Let's go to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4, brethren. And it's hard for us as Christians to do this. This is not an easy thing to do. Ephesians 4, verse 31. Says, and it says a command. He says, get rid of all bitterness. Because this is not old. You know, this is since Paul. Bitterness, rage, and anger. Brawling. Because he's even addressing brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. That's the command he tells us, brethren, for us to do that. Brethren, it's the root of bitterness, the subtle sin of stuffing our anger and turning it into hate that slowly morphs into bitterness. Let's go to 1 Peter for our last verse, or last chapter. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 to 12. This is our friend Peter. Verse 8 of 1 Peter chapter 3. And it says, finally, all of you, live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Be compassionate and humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but with blessing, because to this you were called. That's what we were called, brethren. So that you may inherit a blessing. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from deceitful speech. He must turn from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Brethren, don't hate, like they nowadays use. Know that God is in control. Remember, we have to stay focused. God will take care of those that do us harm. Remember, he said, vengeance is mine. And it is, brethren. But we need to give that to him. He might not do it right away. He might not do it in a year. And he might not do it when we're alive. It may not be done to our knowledge. If nothing is done, do not wonder why. And stay the course. Focus on our blessings. God has your back.